Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Aaron Snowall, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in radio show. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, and we got our radio aficionado, world famous Bob Murray. Man, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hey, you know, big day in Pottsville, too. The St. Patrick's Day Parade starting right now at 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
so, you know, that's always
Irish,
a big day in Pottsville.
The Irish, man. Hey, you talking
everybody's
about Yingling's brew, that green beer, bro, be flowing in Pottsville, man. That there's a lot of booze being drinking for Big Irish Day, man. The bit of the Irish, man. The bit of the Irish. Hey, Bob, it looks like a bit of the Irish was happening down there in Philly with, you know, big
Petey
Irish
Taylor.
Fights down there. Yeah, Kelly Taylor, he delivered. Talk a little bit about
that.
Yeah,
Katie Taylor. Yeah, Katie did. Yeah, she, it was kind of a St. Patrick's Day event, too. The Lee Corus Center down on Temple University campus last night. Yeah, big fight. That was on the zone also. And what happened was Katie Taylor, she got her third belt last night. She beat Rose Volante, who was undefeated going into the fight. She won by a ninth-round stoppage. So now Taylor has the IBF, WBA, and WBO World Female Lightweight crowns. And this is setting up something we talked about a long time ago. We want to see, you know, the good women get at it, and looks like we might have Delphine Persoon. She's the great champion from Belgium. She's the WBC champ with a 43-1 record, and she just might be taking on Katie Taylor, who's now 13-0. And we were talking a little bit ago too. This looks like it might happen on the undercard of the Joshua Miller. I mean, yeah, the Joshua versus Miller fight. So we'll see what happens there. And yeah, it's another. She's fought in Madison Square Garden and in Barclays already. So, yeah, June 15th, we'll see if that comes together. But big fight, big win for Taylor last night, speaking of the Irish. And also just to mention, too, the topper, the main event there last night was the Philly guy, Tevin Farmer. Good fight, too, against John O'Carroll. They were going back and forth, and it turned out Farmer won by unanimous decision, and he retains his IBF World Super Featherweight, or Junior Lightweight, I guess IBF calls it, Junior Lightweight title. So, good fight last night, but looking forward to a fight this summer. Maybe we see Taylor in person, just like we're going to see Clarissa Shields and Christina Hammer coming up next month, too, in Atlantic City.
Women's boxing is really coming together with them putting them unification fights together. It's really something. But Kaylee Taylor also, for the bit of the Irish, you know, for her winning them belts like that, she becomes the first Irish person to do that, Kaylee Taylor.
Yeah,
so she makes history.
She's also
in that way.
Olympic champion,
Yeah. We have to talk with our historians about that. What does that mean? You know, for the bit of the Irish, did Blimey Stone, man, get that green bear, man. The brew. The brew, baby.
Yeah. And the corned beef and cabbage, baby. That's what I've got cooking
later
today.
Hey, look, you can't beat that corned beef and cabbage, man, in there. A little butter, a little pepper in there, man. Slice you up some corned beef, baby. You know, that corned beef and rye bread, man, or get you some thick loaf bread, man. And, oh, man, you can make sandwiches, all kind of things. Them grilled corned beef with sauerkraut in them, too. Oh, man.
Yeah, just put it in a bowl.
It goes big time, but. Bob, we got, you know, before we go any further on a softer note, we want to send our prayers and blessings, you know, what happened on with someone going into a mosque.
Down there in New Zealand,
in New Zealand, and, you know, 49 people and families. And it's real sad that the person who did it, he was filming it.
Yeah.
To my understanding.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was streaming live.
Yeah. How sick of a mind is that to do that? Now, you know, the community has to heal and all that, but not really understanding that, you know, that every day belongs to the Lord. Every second belongs to the Lord. And when people go into a place of faith, you know, to escape these type of things, and it happens to them, you know, the Lord is just, and he sends people as mortars right into heaven. So what looks appear to be bad, God takes it around and turns it also good. And the prayers and blessings go out to all the families that have received loss, the hardship, to witness all of this. You know, then you have survivors that witness this kind of act, man. You know, from out there in Pittsburgh, you know, going to a synagogue in the South where the kid went into a church and did the same thing. It's just sad, man, for people have to have these type of perverted minds. But also, you know, we have to look at mental illness too, which a lot of people in the WBC is pushing that. And with our condolences going out to George Foreman. He lost his daughter. It's to my understanding she committed suicide. And that's very, very sad, you know, to have a child do such a thing like that. But you never know what someone's going through, and that's why we need these programs like mental health and stuff like that. And Debbie King talked about that last week with her program, Life is a New Cool. Mm-hmm. So with her saying, you know, with Life is a New Cool, about rehabilitation, rehab for those who are going through drug problems, mental illness and sickness and all that. She's right on the money. And if, you know, if she keeps working to get this thing up off the ground and really start a movement, I think that we can help a lot of people.
Well said. Yes, indeed. Very nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so rough week for the world too, but hey, you know, again, faith, you know, pulls you through. And, you know, that's just something that these people are going to be dealing with forever. And it's another stain on society, you know, but we keep moving on somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, what people don't, this is, it ain't a sometime God that you believe in. We believe in all the time God. And evil don't seem to understand that, is that, you know, these acts of evil just get people to draw more closer to God. It don't pull them away. And again, our prayers to go out to George Foreman and his family. And George, who is a preacher, so he understands, you know, this is just tough times. And we help that the Lord keeps people strong and moving in direction. But a longtime friend of mine, from Second Street, Mary Glenn, she passed. And, you know, we want to say, yeah, Mary Glenn. For a bit of time, she worked down Ollie's camp with Sister Lana in the kitchen for a short period of time, and she was help Sister Lana in the kitchen, Mary did, and our prayers and blessings go out to the whole Glenn family from Pottsville of their loss. So, Bob, on that note, what do we got happening in around the world, brother?
Yeah, well, tonight we have the big night going on at the AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, USA. Errol the Truth Spence Jr., 24-0, 21 KOs, defends his IBF World Welterweight title against a 39-0 with 30 knockouts. He's the WBC World Lightweight title holder, Mikey Garcia. He's stepping up two weight classes, going up to 147 for the fight tonight. And this is a Fox pay-per-view event. And we'll also showcase super middleweight David Benavidez, 20-0, 17 KOs, battling Jay Leon Love, who's 24-2-1, 13 knockouts. And unbeaten bantamweight Luis Neri, 28-0, 22 KOs, takes on southpaw Miguel Arroyo, 18-2, 8 KOs. Heavyweight action also on the card includes Chris Arroyo, 37-5-1, versus Jean-Pierre Augustine, 17-0-1. And Charles Martin, 25-2-1 versus Gregory Corbin, 15-0. In Boston, Massachusetts, Mark DeLuca, 22-1, 13 KOs, fights Jimmy Williams, 16-1-1, 5 knockouts for the NABA super welterweight belt. And Charles Foster, 17-0, squares off with Mike Jimenez, 22-1-2 for the NABA light heavyweight crown. Charlotte, North Carolina hosts the super lightweight headliner of Levante Early versus Matt Murphy. And out in Hollywood, California, the night is topped with the super welterweight clash between Jesse Martinez and Bernard Thomas. In Zugos, Puerto Rico, it's Jason Velez, 27-5-1, and Victor Terrazas, 38-5-2, vying for the open WBA Federlatin Super Featherweight Championship. And also undefeated Nestor Bravo, 15-0, faces Lorenzo Chinea, who's 15-2-1 for the vacant WBC Latino lightweight title. Also, Alberto Mercado steps in with Sergio Lopez for the WBC Latino silver featherweight belt. One of those big doubleheaders happening up in Montreal at the Montreal Casino in Quebec, Canada. The first event that begins at 12:30 p.m. this afternoon with Artem Oganisyan, 8-0, crossing the ropes with Damian Sosa, 11-0, for the vacant WBO Youth Super Welterweight title. And the second event begins at 7 p.m. tonight and will highlight the super lightweight clash between Parizan Zucumbaya, 14-0, and Carlos Jimenez, 14-9-1. In Hamilton, Ontario, the welterweight contest of Jesse Wilcox versus Christoph Kovacs closes the night. Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, will see Brian Medina versus Yelson Gonzalez going at it for the WBA Federal Caribbean Super Welterweight title. And the lightweight clash of Robin Zamora taking on Francisco Fonseca tops the card in Managua, Nicaragua, and in Montevideo, Uruguay. The highlight is the Mara Moneo versus Estefania Karen Alaniz female lightweight contest. Action throughout Argentina, including in Perez, Santa Fe, where Alejandro Luis Silva, he's 9-0, fights Victoriano Antonio Santillan, 6-2-1, for the WBC Latino Silver Super Welterweight Belt. And that's going to be on the Argentine Sports Network, Tai Chi Sports. In Santa Fe City, heavyweight Cesar David Krenz, 22-1, and the 6-3 Esteban Raul Lopez battle as the main event. And in Chusca, Tucumán, the headliner will be the super lightweight Emmanuel Gonzalez Jalala and Juan Pablo Parada doing battle. And on the beach at Mar del Plata, Buenos Aires, the features of Claudio Alberto Martinez Solarde versus Alan Gauna, super lightweight clash. Alter Garcia in Cordoba highlights the Eduardo Martin Casal versus Gaston Alejandro Alcaraz super lightweight tangle. Over now to Europe, the start in Buchholz, Germany, where Alicia Molina Kummer, 12-1, will defend her GBC World Female and Women's IBA World, as well as fight for the Open UBF World Female and UBO World Female Super Lightweight Crown when she faces challenger Prika Vico, who's 9-5. Also undefeated, Nico Venentis, 20-0, Nikvato Verkatsasarvili's 10-3 for the vacant GBC Youth Super Featherweight Belt. In SN, it's the heavyweight bout between Patrick Corte, 14-1, and the undefeated John Napari, 20-0, as the headliner. Heavyweight Kevin Johnson tops the card in Pasburg, Bayern, which will also see Slaven Zanjanin, 26-4, with 20 knockouts, defending his UBF European Super Welterweight Championship. And over in Busto Arsizio, Lombardia, Italy, where we see bantamweight Gabriel Ganji and Trajan Slavev clash. In Cesano, Lazio, super welterweight Mariano Mucciarelli and Zoltan Horvath meet up. In Toulouse, France, Yannick Dehaze and Alessandro Kazia vie for the open IBO international welterweight belt. Also unbeaten, Bastien Ballesta, he's 17-0-1, fights Yves Mesny for the vacant France super lightweight crown. In Isfahan and Endre, Alaeddin Moussa steps in with fellow super lightweight Tomas Avidiez. And in Zurich, it's Vincent Galazzo meeting up with Emba Biesi in the super welterweight finale. Marisani Haro features the lightweight matchup between Lucas Cabello and Thibault Sergent. Avanaz and Ardesh closes their night with the Stevens Bonacel versus Thomas Canito middleweight tangle. Cruiserweight Ricardo Snyders, he's 16-0, steps in with Dennis Sterligaitis, who's 5-0 in the feature in Vorendaal, Netherlands. Elham Rakalet, 11-0, fights Danilo Ramos for the interim WBC World Female Super Featherweight title in the main event in Barcelona, Spain. Crossing over now to the UK, to York Hall, London, where the topper is the 16-2 Sam O'Maison and Kay Prospera, 12-1, clashing for the Triple BFC English Super Lightweight Crown. Over in Nottingham, the headliner is the fight for the 3BFC English welterweight belt between Echo Esuma and Tyrone Mason. And over in Oldham, in Lancashire, they have Mark Leach, 11-1-1, and Thomas Asamba, 8-5, both seeking the vacant Triple BFC English Bantamweight crown. The 6-0 Super Welterweight Conor Wright headlines in Bedford, and then out on the spring in Time and Wear, the Bantamweight battle between unbeaten Joe Mafosa, 7-0, and the 13-16-1 Luis Norman ends the show there. And the open RBO World Heavyweight title will go to the winner of the Pedro Safkani. He's 8-0 versus Leandro Rufino, 6-0-1 bout taking place in Örebro, Sweden. Also on the card there will be the battle for Zverev to face Samo Sangral. Over in Riku Kuntali in Finland, super lightweights Jarkko Pukkanen and Oscar Amador square off. And Rice and middleweights Aku Kananen and Valentis Kososov beat up. In Radzinkow, Poland, is Adam Grabajek versus Vladimir Borowski. And in a middleweight showdown as the main event. The light heavyweight meeting of Gyula Dulazar and Joseph Almel tops the show in Gyula, Hungary. In Gori Archi Krios, Russia, 5-0 super middleweight Vyacheslav Barsikov steps in with Artem Bichkin in that feature. And over in Adana, Turkey, Alcaraz owner 10-1 fights Basha Samson, 18-16-5, for the vacant WBF Intercontinental Middleweight Belt. Couple of title fights in Gauteng, South Africa, where John Bopop goes against Boyd Allen for the open WBA Pan-African Super Welterweight Belt. And the hometowner, Kevin Lorena, 21-1, fights the 15-0. And on the Far East, in Gifu, Japan, unbeaten KC Tanaka. He's 12-0 classes with Ryoichi Taguchi, 27-3-2 for the WBO World Flyweight Crown. And Kento Hatanaka, 7-0, steps in with Sonsaien Foyam, 6-1 for the WBC Youth World Flyweight Crown. And a couple of title fights in Jakarta, Indonesia as well, with Mikusaku Yor and Artibano Galia continuing to contest the UBO International Super Bantamweight Belt. And it's Roy Tua Manuhurt and Vashiyan Kama clashing for the UBO Intercontinental Super Lightweight Belt. Action also in Southport, Queensland, Australia, where Matthew Hartman meets up with Mark Cavaletta for the Australian Queensland State Middleweight Belt. And Benjamin Kelleher faces Uriah Afamasaga for the Australian Cruiserweight title. And the feature there is the 9-0 Jacob Eng versus Glenn Entevaken IBF Youth Lightweight Crown. And there we go, 22 countries. Things are happening around the world and in the news and everything else. But, yeah, some good fight style fights. And, you know, we talked about the women fighting. There's a fight over there in Germany with the smaller belts, but there's four smaller belts on the line there, too. So lots of good action. Here we go, around the world.
Around the world, Bob. World famous Bob Murray. Look, let me tell you something, Bob. You know, before we get to talk about, you know, Dante Wilder and Fury and that whole, you know, TV stuff,
yeah,
these big money yeah contracts, we want to bring in our historian, Henry Hascott. Welcome to the World Boxing Review. Henry, how you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing very good. I still can't get over how Bob can pronounce all them names. It just marvels me. I wish I could pronounce half of them that
way. Yeah, maybe it's a bit of the Irish day, too. He's a little more spoken. It's Irish day, you know, weekend, you know.
Yeah.
A bit of the Irish.
Well, tell you the truth, even if you pronounced it wrong, I wouldn't even know it, you know. I remember him telling me, if you make a mistake, you just keep on going, and nobody will even notice, but he does a fantastic
no
job, and so do you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Henry, you know, we had spoke earlier about in the show that, you know, about George, the passing of George Foreman's daughter.
No. Yeah, I got the word earlier this week, and, you know, first they didn't know how she passed away. Then they found out, you know, the what happened. And, you know, it's really a shame. Like you said, mental illness is a tough thing. I know I have a stepdaughter that's in that position, and, you know, she takes all kind of medication. You know, if you don't get help, you know, it's tough. You know, it's really tough, but... you know, my condolences goes out to the Foreman family, and you know, it's just no words can describe losing a child.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, Henry, let's talk about this film box or whatever it's called up here in East Orange, New Jersey. you know, tell us about it. You know, it's the first thing on film and stuff. Tell us about this, Henry.
Okay. Okay. You know, it really all began in the summer of 1894 when Enoch Rechner and the Latham brothers, they met up in New York, and they ran into this Thomas Edison's latest invention, the kinetoscope peephole machine. And, you know, they went into the building, and, you know, they wanted to see what it was all about. And they were very, very impressed. And one of the Latham brothers, you know, said, you know, maybe, you know, we could put, you know, fights on this, you know, boxing. I think that would really go over big. And but the only problem was that the film at the time was only 20 seconds long. You know, so they said, you know, they had to work on that because, of, you know, 20 seconds is not much of a time unless, you know, you have guys like Julian Jackson or Mike Tyson fighting, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're not gonna get much of a fight. So they made a longer booth, and the tape was you know, a fight going like 5 foot long, and everything like this. So it came out to a minute, you know, and so they put two guys in the ring. I think it was, you know, back in, let's say, 1894 again. They put two guys in a ring. It was lightweight Mike Leonard and Jack Cushing. And they boxed, you know, several one-minute rounds, and they put it up on, you know, on tape and these peepholes and everything like this. And it went over fairly well. But then they wanted a big name. You know, they, you know, the rumors had it they wanted John L. Sullivan, but Sullivan wanted too much money. So they went to the next best thing, the guy to beat Sullivan, and that was James J. Corbett. And, you know, they offered him like $4,700 to spar around with this guy by the name of Courtney. And they sparred around for 1 minute rounds, six rounds altogether. And it went over fairly well. I mean, you know, even with the peepholes and everything like this, you know, they made quite a bit of money doing it, and it kind of took off from there. But the thing was, you know, they wanted 3 minute rounds, you know, not just 1 minute round. So one of the Latham brothers devised a system with a loop in it, and that expanded it to 8 minutes. So now we have 8 minute round. You know, you can actually film something for 8 minutes instead of the custom 1 minute. So that kind of projected it, you know, more and more. So so they decided to have another match between Young Griffo and battling Charles Barnett. And you know, Charles Barnett was you know, just a regular contender and stuff like this. And Young Griffo, he was like the Willie Pep of his day. And they just had a fight, and they just wanted a reenactment of that fight in Madison Square Garden. They put it on top of Madison Square Garden, so the light was good and everything like this. And they fought, and then they showed it, you know, on a projector instead of this peephole, which a lot of people could see, more people could see than that peephole thing. And just go back, the Corbett fight that they had was in Thomas Edison's, you know, it looked like a barn. It was a Mariah, Black Mariah. You know, it was all black and everything like this. And, you know, but this fight between Griffo and Barnett went over very, very well. And it was the first projected film in history. But still, they wanted a real fight, you know. So, you know, right now it was only exhibitions. So they came up with a variscope. A variscope was a machine that that needed to operate the camera manually using a team of three men, one to turn the feed and thus keep the film from slacking. The second was to crank the mechanism by hand, and the third one was to take up the reel. In much way, longer and heavier reels of the film could be used. So there was one hitch, though. You know, to do this, they had to be inside the camera. So now you know how big the camera had to be. So they wanted to put on a big fight, and they fooled around with a couple of fights, but that always fell through. But back in 1897, they finally got what they wanted. That was James J. Corbett versus Bob Fitzsimmons. And they put this humongous camera near the front row of the venue, of the ring. And it looked like almost like a barn. And they had three cameras in there. And they had teams of three people for each camera. And they filmed this fight, you know, over and over again. And, you know, the thing was, it would go for 8 minutes. So the first guy, first camera, would go for 4 minutes. And then the other group of people would go the next 4 minutes. Then another one would go for the next 4 minutes. So at times, most of the, just about all the time, there was actually two cameras running at the same time. So you got two, you know, you wouldn't lose anything. And this went on until, of course, the 14th round. Thing was, you know, they wanted the bout to last at least 10 rounds. And earlier in the fight, actually, Corbett actually floored Fitzsimmons. And then he kind of backed off. A lot of historians will say he backed off because they wanted the fight to last longer than 5 or 6 rounds. They wanted at least 10 rounds. But in the 14th round...
So they wanted him to carry him, huh?
Yeah, well, that kind of worked against him, you know? I mean, you know, this is what a lot of people feel, but I don't know how true it was. But in the 14th round, of course, Bob Fitzsimmons landed the soul plex punch, and he went down. And there was a picture that a teenager took. He actually took two pictures. He took one at the end of the sixth round, or during the sixth round, and one at the end of the fight. And you could see the camera. Like I said, it looked like a small house into that thing. And, you know, but then they showed it, like, a few months later in New York, and they showed it to a, you know, like a movie theater. And the thing was, instead of, I think it was like a 63 millimeter film instead of the standard 30 millimeter film. So it was bigger and wider. It was on a 30-foot screen, and a lot of people, like, saw it, you know, saw the whole fight. They were very, very impressed. Then a few years later, they had another fight between the then-champion James J. Jeffries against Tom Sharkey. Now, this was the first fight filmed indoors, and there was no lighting. You know, they had to get their own lighting, and they had such strong lighting, it must have been like almost like sun lamps, because it had to be very, very bright, and it got really, really hot. In fact, they said it was so hot that the two fighters actually singed their hair. That's how hot it was. And, you know, we boxed 12 rounds today, the championship bouts. This bout went 25 rounds. And that was the first fight ever, you know, fought indoors with this artificial lighting. And, of course, they improved since then. Of course, there was other sports that that had, you know, films. They filmed the end of a horse race in 1896. And they had a baseball film of guys running to first base in 1880. 1898, and even in football, on November 14th, 1903, they had the first football game ever filmed. That was Princeton against Yale. That was in New Haven, Connecticut. But boxing, that preceded everything. And, you know, you come to look at it, you know, boxing is very easy to film. All you got to do is set the camera up and you know, just about the width of the ring. And if you see some of the old-time fighters and old-time films, you'll see the two fighters boxing, and all of a sudden they go to the one side of the ring, and all of a sudden they're out of the camera range because they didn't put the camera back far enough, and you know they didn't know how to adjust the camera, you know, to move it. You know, it was just a stationary thing. But you know, boxing, you know, it was the one with Fritz Simmons and Corbett. That's known as the first you know, motion picture, you know, of all time. You know, I mean, thing lasted over an hour, and you know, they went from 50 feet right in the beginning to over 4 miles of film in just less than 3 years. So they made a lot of progress, and you know, like I said, you know, boxing.
But then boxing pussycats in the early stages were those 10-second or 5-second clips. It was the boxing cats.
Oh yeah.
The boxing cats.
Well, the thing I noticed, you know, I was watching the film the other day, you know, the whole film of Fritz Simmons and Corbett, and Bat Masterson, he was the timekeeper. And next to him, there was a guy with his elbows on the ring, and he had a hat on. And all of a sudden, he takes the hat off and he starts waving it. And you know, I said, well, "What's he doing that for?" You know, "What's he doing that for?" I realized that was a 10-second warning. You know, so done way back then. You know, they just did it. They didn't have a whistle or anything. I just seen the guy, you know, take off the hat and wave it, and I counted 1, 2, 3, and as soon as I counted to 10, all of a sudden the handlers are getting into the ring. I said, "Wow!" I said, "That's a, you know, 10-second warning. That's the way they used to do it." So it was kind of something I even learned, you know, watching the film once again. But that's the crux of you know, the first fight films. And of course now, I mean, you know, just about everything is up on YouTube, and you can watch it. I mean, Steve Lott has probably the best films of anybody, and I even got in contact with him this week. And you know, he didn't even know some of the stuff that I came up with. So we, you know, it was pretty darn good. And like I said, boxing has a long history, and it even has history in the films. So.
Yeah, and for people though who don't know who Steve Lott is, Steve Lott was with Jim Jacobs, Bill Caton, and Custom Model, and then with Mike Tyson, and them, and he had access to Jim Jacobs' family. They had the largest film collection in the history of boxing when it came to
film.
Yeah,
he has that with ESPN now. Yeah.
What a guy, Steve Lott. He signed on to the Jack Johnson project early on. Steve did. What a gentleman and a scholar Steve is, and
he just loves
boxing dearly.
Yeah, I work with him on the Las Vegas Boxing Hall of Fame. Yeah, that's a World Boxing Hall of Fame too, and I actually work with him on that. But getting back to the Jeffries Corbett fight, the film itself was shown throughout the states and even outside the states, and it's said to have grossed $1 million, you know, just by showing that film over and over again. So you know, it's pretty darn good. You know, our sport, and we have a lot of history behind.
That's a lot
it.
Of nickels.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know, they didn't pay, you know, the nickels were in that peephole thing. Now when they put it on a projector so everybody could see it at once, they paid a little bit more than a nickel. But, you know.
We have our guests holding on in the queue. But to get to
I
got to
go anyway.
Henry, we want to thank you and tell your grandson for – thank him for allowing the bar you today,
because yeah,
we know
I thought I was done
time,
with this years ago with my kids. Now my grandson, I'm going to go tag day. I think it's at the IHOP in Hasbrook Heights, you know. So I'm going to be leaving right now.
Yeah, well, tell him that all of us say thank you so much for letting you deliver a bit of history about the Maria Box up there in East Orange, the first part of film in boxing, to be filmed. Not no other sport.
Yep.
Boxing was the first, and many things for people of color. You know, Jack Johnson probably was the first black sportsman to be filmed on film at that time, and then he put two players of the Kansas City Royals on film in the Negro League. So, you know, boxing has...
Well, George Dixon was one of the first blacks to be filmed. They have quite a few pictures of him, you know, and he was like late 1800s also. But, you know, like I said, boxing has a long history, and, you know, even with the films and everything like this, the first, you know, feature-length film was, you know, a fight between Fritz Simmons and Corbett. So, okay, I got to run. And
Well, thank you, Henry, for tuning in to the world, coming on the show for the World Boxing Review. My name is Aaron Snow, Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, and our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. And we like to welcome our guest, Joseph Akawanda. How you doing, Joseph?
I'm okay.
Joseph Jr.
Yeah. Joseph, how you doing?
Man, say your last name again for us, because I like the way you say it in that strong African Guyanian accent. Say it.
Awenonga. Awenonga. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I'll take the here.
Like, man, that name and that accent, Joseph, second to none. We spent a lot of time in training camps, training together, in King's training camp. You were good at your trade as a fighter coming from Ghana, Africa, Zuma Nelson and them hometown. But your son is trying to make a path for himself at 12 years old. In the boxing, right?
Yeah, my son is a four-time national champion, and he's doing really good. You know, I learned a lot of things from you guys, you know, all the people that I meet in my life, and a lot of people I went through. You know, you take pieces from everybody, and then when your boxing life was over, you sit down and tell yourself, when my son won the box, I said, okay. And then you put everything together and start, you know, put it together and show him how to, and then end up doing really good, you know.
Okay, is Joseph Jude Jr., is he there with you?
Yeah, he's right here with me.
Come on, champ, Joseph Jr., 12-year-old junior Olympic winner, man, number two rated in the world, but you've won a lot of tournaments, man. Welcome to the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Joseph.
Yeah, thank you.
Man, let me tell you, the travel in your father's footsteps is a rough task, but you're doing a yeoman job. What are some of the tournaments you won, and what's your plans for the future?
So the tournaments that I won the Silver Gloves twice, and I won the Junior Olympics, and I won the USA Nationals. And then what are some of my goals are like, to become a world champion in boxing and to get many different belts and professional, and just to make sure that I have many fans supporting me and that I complete all of their goals that they have for me too.
Oh, man. I can tell your father's doing a great job with you all around. But you're also, that we just talked about the first film. It's my understanding, not only you're a good boxer, but you do a little acting. You're in a movie or something like that? Tell me a little bit about that.
We have a movie called Fighting in America, and then that's just me on my journey through boxing and what I've been doing, and it just mostly shows what I am.
Wow. Hey, Bob Murray, world famous. Look, you got any questions for Joseph here?
Yeah, I'd like to see this film. Tell us how we can view this. Where is it at? Where can we see it? Probably on the internet somewhere. Would you have an address?
The movie where you went to see the movie?
Yes.
The movie is on Amazon, and it's called Fighting in America, I Am Your Keeper.
Fighting in America. Okay. I Am Your Keeper on Amazon. Okay. Well, yeah, pass that along. We'll take a look at that later. Yeah. Cool. That sounds exciting.
Well,
very
Joseph,
good.
At 12 years old, who besides your father, who are some of the people that you looked up to that in boxing?
Most of the people are like Floyd Mayweather and Deontay Wilder. Like, the reason I like watching Deontay Wilder is mostly because the knockouts and all of that. And then I like Floyd Mayweather because he accomplished many different things that nobody else has done. And he also, he was the one that that brought up and started doing a lot of different things that people copied off of him.
Wow, you like sport to follow boxing too, I can tell. Well, what do you think about tonight's the big fight? And before we go into it later on, we got Spencer and Garcia going up the head to head on a big pay per view tonight down in Texas. What do you think about that fight? Talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think mostly Errol Spence will win because of mostly all of the box, the different boxing styles that he has, and mostly he's going to be the one showing all of his power, and that's what I think.
Wow, you're very knowledgeable.
Very good.
Isn't he? Well, you know, you got Garcia moving up. He's won title in three or four other weight classes. What do you think about that? You know, him coming up there and stepping up, fighting a bigger guy that's champion, and he's trying to win another belt in another weight class. How do you feel about that?
Since he's in a different weight class, maybe since Errol Spence has been there, and then he maybe has the advantage, and so mostly Mikey Garcia, if he wins this, fight him, and he's just going to become a more known fighter.
Okay. Wow. Isn't that something? So in a big fight like this, in a big fight like this, there's really, really somebody most likely is going to win, but in a big fight, there's really no losers because he's coming up in weight class. Is that what you're saying, Joseph?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Joseph, tell me some of your favorite punches you like to...
Mostly the favorite punches that I like to throw are the right hook one, and then I'll go like a right hand to the stomach, and then it makes a huge loud noise. And then like, what else was the other question?
Style?
Styles, yeah.
What style do you have? You're a boxer, slugger, counter puncher? What, or can you do it all?
I can do it all, but like mostly I'm either boxing or counter punching the person.
Wow, your father did teach you well. You like because your father had an extremely tremendous jab. Your father did.
Yeah.
Have you seen tapes of your father?
Yeah, I've seen some tapes of him. They're really good. It showed like what different type of styles he have, and mostly. But I think I'm better than him now.
And you think? Okay, well, that's something to be proud of. He's really put. I want to ask you something about your father's countrymen. And do you know Azuma Nelson?
Yes. He helps me a lot, and then we talk to each other a lot, and he's mostly encouraged me and for me to become a better boxer.
Well, let me tell you, with the encouragement of Azuma Nelson, who's a Hall of Famer, featherweight, a great all-time great featherweight champion, Azuma Nelson, we spent a lot of time together in Don King's training camp in Ohio with different fights. Overseas in England and stuff like that. Boy, you really have somebody to be inspired by. if you can take little bits and pieces of the people that you have around them, you too are going to be great at an early age, and you are showing that already. And I'm just proud to meet you, and may God bless you in your endeavors and your conquests to be the best fighter in the world. So let's bring your father in real quick, Joseph Sr. What are some of the tournaments are you looking to, you know, for your son at? You know, he's won a lot. How do you keep his spirit going to keep him wanting to train hard and keep on competing at this level? Because, you know, a lot of times guys start winning and get complacent. What do you do?
What I do is, you know, before when he was now, but when he when he was growing up, I never let him do a weight, like cut his weight down and all this. So always when we go to a tournament, I let him fight higher weight classes. Maybe we go, we never make a weight. So this time we try to make it. And the boxing also is a little bit different now. It's not like before. You know, it's
right.
When you go to a fight, you don't have to worry. I don't worry about the kid that my son is fighting. I always worry about the judges, you know. And and it's very, very sad, you know. Like now we're going to the Eastern Qualifier in Reno.
Uh-huh.
You spend all this money to go over there. Some of my friends, they don't want to go. I said, man, I don't want to go this far. I'm not going to spend money to waste my time going there. And then my kid will do good, and then they will take the fight away from my kid. And it's very, very hard. But it is, you know, he's a young kid, and then you try to push
yeah,
him.
Yeah, and they're trying to fix all of that with USA Boxing. If people don't know, USA Boxing, the Olympic Committee said that they had to get rid of the president, which was John Brown. If USA Boxing wanted to stay with the United States Olympics, is that they would have to get rid of the president and bring more board members. And I received a letter. They had they were looking for people, around 8 to 10 people to sit on their board. They're creating a new board, and they're trying to revamp themselves of a great organization that produced the likes of Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, Sugar Ray Leonard, those great fighters, George Foreman, you know, Olympian Tim Austin, Nate Jones, Oscar De La Hoya, you know, those type of fighters on that high level like that. So I think you're going to see a little bit different things coming down the stretch here with the changes that they're making, and I hope the changes are for the good and not the bad.
Yeah, I think they don't have a choice. They have to do it because now when the Olympics, they go to Olympics, they don't win medals no more. And America is a big country, and it's very sad that when you go to the big tournament, why is that? And how long it took you guys to look at it and say why we don't win medal no more? There's something wrong in the top, and I hope the change is quick, faster. If you don't do it, you're gonna keep on hurting them. They can still, they can have the wrong people judging the fight, doing the writing. But anytime they step up to the next level, the kids don't go nowhere. You know, just anytime they step up, they're not gonna win. They're not gonna win any medal for the country. And that's their problem, because now I think, and to be honest with you, when you find the right people also to sit on board to do something, most of people also don't like that. You know, they always find a way to have the one person want to have the whole control, you know, just pick up people that he know that he can control them. That's why the USA Boxing is going down. It's always going down. It's going to be going, if they don't do something about it, it's going to go really down. It's going to be bad. That's why the kids now, they want to
step. Yeah. Well, they're making the changes. Let's hope the changes are good. Hey, look, in closing, we want to bring Joseph Jr. back in, and we want to ask him, you know, what's his views? Does he have anything that he wants to say on his own to get a message out there to anybody or anything? Hello?
Oh, okay. He's right here.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, Joseph. Look, we want to know, what do you want to say? What do you want to get out there? You know, now's your time. You can say it, get it out there, and in closing?
I just want to shout out to all of my supporters and to let them know that I'll become a very great boxer and I'll complete all of my goals. And shout out to Azuma Nelson and to Hawk Joliet, and that's what I want to say.
Oh, man. Bob, do you hear
very
this?
Good. Yeah, how about this? Hey, Joseph, man, we're impressed here.
Do you hear this guy?
Yeah.
Maybe we should bring him on and let him talk on the radio sometimes, man. Very impressive, Joseph. And
yeah.
I can tell your father's doing a great job with you and with us from the World Boxing Review radio show. We'd like to wish you the best, wish your father the best, your family the best, and God bless you, brother, and thank you for coming on the World Boxing Review radio show.
Yeah, thank you for having me
yeah,
on your
you.
Show.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
Look,
you.
Bob, man, what an impressive young man. You know, wow, we got to bring him back. He's
really impressive, yeah.
Yeah, he's just an impressive young man. But, you know, we're talking about film, you know, all of these guys like Deontay Wilder. You know, he went through the amateur program. He was a bronze medalist. You hear the young man talk about him. He's impressed with Deontay Wilder. But Deontay Wilder, on the film side, what we talked about, we're talking about, we said when they offered him $50 million, then now, you know, he didn't want the 50, now he wants 100. Let's talk a little bit about that, Bob. What do you think
now,
about
it? Now, does he even want the 100? I was like, where's the pen? But, yeah, what we're looking at here is the zone's offering him a 3-fight deal for $100 million. They're going to have a press conference on Tuesday to see if they have any answers for us. But the way that would break down is that they want to do $20 million for the upcoming Brazil fight in May, and then $40 million each for two shots with Joshua. And the big thing that pops out here, too, is that there's no Fury rematch with Bob Arum and all that. So if he signs with the zone, we're not going to see that rematch that a lot of people want to see, too. And speaking of Fury, he signed a date now to fight on June 15th in Vegas, and he still doesn't have an opponent. We're going to have these guys jumping out in the ring and nobody to fight. They're putting dates down. You know, where Joshua was going to be fighting, that date fell apart, you know, so. They're throwing a lot of stuff out there, but, yeah, $100 million, he's still holding out for more money. 3-fight deal, you know, but he's a free agent.
Well,
it's like that free agent thing where you keep selling yourself.
Bob,
don't agree with
I'm going to tell you, you know, Hearn said the guys are trying to get it underneath the table, you know, that went up to $100 million. So there was apparently something under the table that they bring above the table, but guess what? I'm going to tell you what Muhammad Ali told me a long time ago. He said when they start putting millions and millions on the dollars on the table, he said you press them as long as far as you can. He said after that, you press them. He said you hurry up and grab the pen, sign on the dotted line before this guy comes to his senses, say, why am I going to give this fool $100 million? you know, Ali was the best, but boy, oh boy, does he hit it right on the head. He said, man, you grab that pen, and he said, after you sign, then you argue about the rest. He said, but don't let the $100 million get away from you. You know what I mean? This guy might come to, why am I giving this guy this kind of money? He don't deserve this thing. Not after them only 300,000 pay-per-view buys. That don't sound, it don't calculate into, it's millions, but it don't calculate into a whole bunch. But guess what, Bob? You know what I say? Since they don't have opponents, you know, let's find Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, and Lennox Lewis. Let them get the, you know, start training again. You know, there'd be a draw with them guys. They can probably.
Hey, Shannon Briggs is out there. That's what we're saying. Shannon Briggs is ready to fight. We call that one way back when, too, baby.
Yeah, we like Shannon Briggs, but let me tell you. 300,000 buys, Mike Tyson on his worst night can draw 300,000 buys. Right now, Mike Tyson probably can draw a half a million buys with people on pay-per-view and Evander Holyfield.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they can do those kind of numbers. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, we're going to be talking. Yeah, we're going to look at the tonight's game, too. You know, this is a Fox pay-per-view event. You know, Fox is looking at this saying we can get a million people on this one. I don't know. You know, you got Spence and Garcia. It's going to be curious. It's $75 a pop, too. So, once again, we got that high price point. So
we'll
see what kind of numbers.
Think,
we'll be able to get the numbers on this. So, yeah, I don't know where we're going to end up tonight.
Yeah, I think you can get the numbers on tonight, next week sometime, because it's on
pay-per-view. Yeah, we'll be able to get them,
It's not being streamed, because them streaming guys don't want to release the numbers. But
no.
But I think, Bob, this is a dynamite fight, as the young man was talking about, Joseph.
Yeah,
and
about
father.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah, he saw.
Yeah,
it.
He knew.
He
sees
what's going on. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, with Garcia, you know, he's coming up from winning in three different weight classes. He's stepping up to the plate, you know what I mean, and taking a challenger with a bigger guy. You know what I mean? You know, Roberto Duran did it. Roberto Duran was there acting as a promoter down there. And it was good to see Roberto running around,
yeah.
You know, clowning around. Tommy Hearns is down there. They bring Tommy, you know, to spark that greatness at 140, 147. But Roberto Duran did that. He moved up in weight classes, and he met the likes of, Tommy Hearns and them guys as he moved up. I think Spence, at the end of the day, with a exciting fight. If Garcia is a very, very busy fighter. He stays busy, throws a lot of good punch and combination. He's aggressive and things like that. I think to look at a comparison would be Alexis Agüero Aaron Pryor fight, where you had a technician and someone who threw a lot of punches, box and weave. If Spence can do the things, some things like Aaron Pryor did, take a good shot on the chin tonight, and be able to match that punch count and take him down the stretch where his bigger size is going to wear him down. He has a great chance tonight of winning this matchup.
Right. It's going to be good, too. So, that's coming on tonight. Fox pay-per-view. We'll have the numbers for you next week. And we have Benavidez, too, the super middleweight. He's on that card. And Luis Neri. So, a lot of undefeated action going on tonight, too, in that fight. Down there in Arlington, Texas.
there in Texas. Look, With 90 seconds to go, Bob, let me tell you, you know, I think with this pay-per-view, they're trying to draw the Hispanic crowd, Latino, and hope that they turn out for Garcia big time with pay-per-view. But I think that $75, like you said, is a little bit too strong. And we had talked about this many times, you know, in the overall amount, it looks good, you know, the numbers, when, you know, you do 75,000. But, look, you do more buys at a lower number and you earn more money, you know, I think.
Right.
And like you said,
right.
I'd go for the high number of sales because the sales are impressive and you'll probably end up with more money with the higher buys. So, Bob, in closing, you know, we like to thank our Gary Kawane and Joseph Jr. Man, he's very impressive, man, doing that. And our boxing historian, Henry Halfcup, he really delivers, man.
That was awesome, yeah.
Excellent about the film and boxing, first to be on film. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our world-famous radio aficionado, Bob Murray. Thank you for tuning into the show.
Thank you. See you next week. Bye.